Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, March 10th, and it is 1:30 p.m. This is Talk on the Rock, and I'm your host, Colette Zarnicki. The Ringgold Cooperative Association has a new domestic violence prevention program manager, who is Naomi Fowler. She's with us in the studio today and will speak with us about the changes going on with the program. You can call in to ask a question or leave a comment. The number to KSGK is 874-2345. Hi, Naomi. Thanks for coming in. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hati Adi, thank you for having me and thank you for all tuning in. I am happy to be here.
Wonderful. We're happy for you to be here, too. Will you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Well, I am Naomi Fowler. I was born and raised in Wrangell, and I grew up here until I left in junior high to live in Sitka. So I spent 4 years living in Sitka, sort of during formative years, and I came back in high school. I graduated Wolfpack 1992, and I went on to go to Southern Oregon State University and Fort Lewis College, graduating with a degree in humanities after a long journey studying criminology and English as a double major at one point.
Wow. How was that?
It was challenging to do a double major, but I needed a scholarship, so I got exposed to the criminology side of academia when I was very young, and it has really served me well in many ways.
Yeah, awesome. So in an email, you told me that your matrilineal grandmother, who is Carol Feller Brady, received a Humanity Award for her life and work. Will you tell us about her and how her work relates with what you're doing right now with WCA?
Thank you for asking about my grandma, Carol. She is one of the most cherished spirits in my life to this day. I constantly feel her presence here in Wrangell, which is one of the reasons that I've come back. She always inspired me with her work with the community. She worked on a transitional housing project for TNH. She also performed as a WCA board member in her time while John was board president. I'm not sure exactly when that was, but my family has all really followed in her footsteps, and my aunties, in particular, Luella Knapp. You may know her. Everybody in Wrangell knows her, but then everybody in Wrangell knows everybody. At any rate, my grandmother was the daughter of Elizabeth Cadishan, who was one of the first grand presidents of the Alaska Native Sisterhood, and she was orphaned at a young age. She wrote a book called Through the Storm Toward the Sun, and it was about her life, and I've always taken inspiration in her tone that she had after being orphaned and having so many brothers and sisters die and her parents, and coming to Wrangell to work at the Wrangell Institute and to be, you know, a baker, and then to be a guide in the dorms for the other students. She kept it very light. She always managed to have a good, happy tone to her, even though you knew she had been through a lot.
Yeah. And you said she came to Wrangell. Where did she grow up?
She was born in Wrangell.
Oh, okay.
But she also lived in Sitka when she was young.
Okay.
And she was a child at Sheldon Jackson. She lived in the cottages, with her mother and her father and one of her grandmothers.
Yeah, thank mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned as well, you in your previous work for giant corporations like Amazon, Indeed, and Visa. Will you talk about that experience?
Sure. I have always just been very interested in technology. And one of my last classes in college, I took a random project to publish the college magazine, which is like a once yearly magazine. And I learned some desktop publishing skills at a time when those skills were really unheard of on the job market. They were new and fresh. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated, I lived in the Bay Area for a while. And while I was there, I got my first break as a marketing coordinator using those skills. And as it turned out, I was a lot better at technology than marketing coordinating. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just because I was fascinated by how it all worked. And so I survived the dot-com bust with those skills. And I went on to move back up north to be near my brother. And at that time, I got a job at Amazon somehow. And it was, as you know, 2005, I guess. And that was a whirlwind. I got sucked into that world. And I really didn't come up for air for about 6 years while I worked there. And it was very challenging. I was surrounded by MBAs and people who were all way more educated than me, with, you know, business skills coming from like the top schools. And I was just somebody who knew how to get things done. And I like to thank my background in fishing for that.
Yeah. Awesome. So you grew up fishing.
I grew up fishing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as mentioned before, okay, you did graduate from Wrangell High School and you left and you made a personal promise to bring your skills back home to benefit your tribe and community. Will you talk about that and what that looks like for you?
The honor of getting a scholarship for the tribe, from the tribe, to go to school is a big one. And I didn't take it lightly at the time. And it was a moment in time where my grandmother was actually working on tribal enrollment projects and like making sure I got signed up with all my cards that I would need to get all the benefits that come from being a native. And I think she threw me an enrollment application, and then it was followed by like a Sea Alaska scholarship application. And at that point, I was just filling out whatever she put in front of me. And I wrote, I've always been an English student, and reading has always been one of my passions. At least it was more when I was younger and I hadn't had to read so much during college. After that, I kind of dropped off of reading for a while. However, I wrote those essays from my heart, and that can be really dangerous because you definitely sign up for more than you really bargain for. Throughout my life, I would say that I've always thought I would come back to Alaska in some capacity and help in some way. And especially as I started getting, you know, my big tech skills, I thought I definitely have a duty to come back and help at some point. And you never really know when that time is going to come. And it will probably surprise you if you're like me and you signed up, you know, to come back someday. That's really how they select students for those scholarships, is whether or not you're planning on doing something with the help that they give you. And when I left Texas after working for Indeed and Visa, I just really missed home. Mm-hmm. And I was really hot. And I wanted to spend time with my mom and my sister and my family. So I moved to Juneau. And then I was laid off. Mm. A lot of people are going through this hardship in tech right now. And it has been a blessing for me because for so many years I was away from home and there was always something missing.
Yeah. When did that happen?
I think it was 2022.
Okay. And then when did you move to Wrangell from Juneau?
That's just been recently. Mm-hmm. I was not really sure exactly what I wanted to do, but I had a business up there that I was running, and it afforded me a break, which was really nice. But I came back to Wrangell in the fall last year, September.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. And so what drew you to domestic violence prevention work, and what relevant experience do you bring with that?
I wanted to work with WCA, and that was kind of where I started. And I applied for different roles at WCA, just trying to figure out what the fit would be. And when I started looking deeper at this particular role, I realized that it spoke to a gap that I have in my personal experience with my culture. And that I had been chasing culture and sort of like a reconnection myself because of, gaps that, you know, had been there for so long that I feel could make me feel something was missing. And I do have personal experiences here and there with domestic violence, and lots with prevention. But I think it would be like sort of ancillary, not really like direct at me, but all around me. Growing up, there were, you know, in the community, in my family, or just seeing friends go through it. So I started to see that there are patterns just in regular relationships that don't involve any violence that also sort of benefit from the perspectives of prevention.
Yeah, thank you. And from my understanding, the domestic violence prevention program at WCA is being re-envisioned after a pause. What does that look like right now?
It looks like a lot of work. It looks like a lot of spending on really important needs in a short time frame, and it has been important to work quickly to recover our control over the grant funds, which had been kind of needing to be transitioned from one owner to another. You know, it's basically update the contact on the grant, figure out like what's the budget plan, and like refresh that with the Indian Health Services team, who have been really wonderful at guiding us in doing this. And as you kind of noted before, what's a program manager plus domestic violence prevention person, you know, actually doing? And I think it's a little bit of everything. And so as we've gone, you know, from just wanting to just restart the grant and get going again, we realized that in order to have long-term prospects to continue the work, we really needed a good core plan. And so we started our yearly budget with a really good foundation that could be repeatable for the future, and then kind of worked backwards from there to capture other requirements and begin to have a really full featured vision that's more expansive.
Yeah. And what does the vision look like?
The vision looks like trying to expand prevention to include more members of the community to do the work with us, to make it truly a collaboration across all of the different organizations that work on prevention in Wrangell, even including people in the schools who are simply teaching, which is an act of prevention in itself, if you ask me.
Yeah, that brings me to a question I have further down my list, but I'll just go to it right now. Who are the key partners that you'd want to build the relationships with for prevention work?
The Wrangell Police, Brave, the community working to help people when things go wrong, Wrangell Schools. Yeah. We also want to work with WISH in Ketchikan, AWARE in Juneau, and ANSBA in Anchorage. We would like to create a very broad fabric to draw from when helping people based on their need.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, with all of those organizations, from Anchorage to Ketchikan, it seems like that is really helpful.
Yes. The idea that we have definitely comes from having worked so hard to recover a grant that was being executed by one person, and we sort of realized that the scope of this is so big if we do it the way that traditional natives would do it, which is having a community fabric to help people. One person can't do this work, and that's why we thought, with the funds that we have now, over the next 2 years, we can create that mesh. And then hopefully it would be a lot more likely to succeed with or without one person.
Yeah, yeah. And so with the focus is to prevent violence before it happens. Will you speak about that?
I looked at a lot of crime data when I started this role, and that kind of comes from my tech background, is always wanting to know why we're doing something. And if you don't know why you're doing something, then you don't know what you're doing, usually. And I feel in this case, what it exposed for me was that there are lots of early warning signs about violence that we can target for prevention. And that really, if you think about crime, violence as a funnel, with the worst possible things being at the bottom and just a lot of possibility at the top, the top's very wide, and we want to reduce the top in order to reduce or eliminate the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Will you speak about those, I would say red flags for before, you know.
Yes. Substance abuse is one of the things that trends almost exactly to violent crime levels. And if we want to reduce crime violence, we can reduce substance abuse. We can provide alternatives to consuming alcohol. And one of the things that I don't know if people really understand, but when you drink, you get a sugar spike. And when you get a sugar spike, you get a cortisol spike. And that's how aggression can easily happen. And so if you provide alternatives to that, you can probably deter some violence, and then you can work your way down to the other portions of the list, which can include public altercations, could include a public disturbance, mm-hmm. a disturbance in the home. And if we can clearly show that we're available for people to just come and even spend some time with us doing a weaving event or listening to a talk about communication skills or having a substance-free party of some sort like that, we can offer a way for people to reach out without really having to make a big deal about it.
And this, I assume, also includes emotional abuse and, you know, mental abuse and financial as well.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. It definitely does. Financial abuse is one of the biggest challenges for somebody experiencing violence. And being able to walk away is a definite, it's for people with resources. And so if we want to give people a chance to walk away, we've got to take care of their basic needs first. Mm-hmm. Or with emotional abuse, we have to give people better communication skills. And one of the things that I always like to tell people and drill into their heads, if I can, is just that you actually don't know what kind of a relationship you have with somebody if your communication is messy. And if you clean up the communication, then you learn what kind of a relationship you have with them. And we have a lot of surface level communication in our society at large. So, you know, we might make jokes and, you know, tell people, I don't know, to go to heck or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm on the radio. Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, we have a lot of people who like to kind of talk crass and crude. And you never know how that's truly received. And if you're trying to connect in a heart to heart, you really need to eliminate that from your language. And it can be very difficult to do that if it's your habit. And so practicing good communication, being curious about it, and also, you know, finding ways to avoid being reactive. It's so important to be curious when people offend you. It's important to start there instead of end up there. How many times have we gotten in an argument with somebody and kicked ourselves later for the way that we spoke to somebody when we got in an argument? And that can really happen when we have, you know, low boundaries. We have a community here that is very familiar with each other. And it can be easy sometimes to not realize that we have opportunities to be more respectful.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mention that you said when you have this habit, it can be difficult. Also, what if they acknowledge the habit and they want to get out of it, but they're still hanging out with the same people that have that habit as well?
Environmental factors are huge. And if you believe that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time around, you might need to consider taking some away time, especially if you're feeling like you're not yourself. You're like, people are misunderstanding me. Well, it's possible you've blended your energy, you know, your identity a little too much. And sometimes it's good to step back and kind of go back to the basics, like, what did you want to be when you were young? What gives you pride? What makes you happy? How can you do more of those things? And a lot of times I think we see quitting what, you know, our bad habits as like the focus, like we got to focus on quitting what we're doing wrong. I actually disagree with that. Gabor Mate says that drinking wasn't the problem. Drinking was in itself the problem. And I think that if you want to transform your life, then you focus on amping up the things that are good in your life. Mm-hmm. Bringing up the vibe, you know, making yourself happier, singing songs in the shower.
Yeah, yeah. And for listeners who don't know who Gabor Mate is, he is a therapist, a renowned therapist who works with, who specializes with addiction. Yeah.
He is an inspiration.
Yeah, definitely. So we talked about prevention work. How do you distinguish between prevention work and crisis response work?
I see prevention as everything up to an antenna. of crisis. And I also see prevention as avoiding the recurrence of a crisis.
Yeah. And Wrangell is a small, close-knit community. How do you navigate confidentiality and relationships when everyone knows everyone?
With absolute care. I plan to hire, and I actually have a candidate for our behavioral health advocate and trainer role, who is pursuing licensing as an LPC. And no matter who we work with in the counseling aspect of our roles, we'll work with people who are pursuing licensing or are licensed, which means that they are bound to privacy. And in, you know, we really haven't talked about the hiring plan, but basically, if you're planning on taking a role in domestic violence prevention, you are already kind of a different person, in my view. And you're someone who would probably care for those things no matter what. But when you actually step into the role, you realize how serious it is. And no one likes to be talked about. And no one wants their business shared. But having the confidence that somebody won't do that is just essential when it comes to healing. And if, you know, when we begin counseling, we actually assure that privacy with secure data platforms. And I'm going back to the tech side of things, but I don't play with data, and I certainly would not allow for any privacy to be breached under my watch.
Yeah. And you said whoever takes on this role, and I would count you too, because you're taking on this role, this work can be emotionally heavy. What does your self-care and sustainability practice look like?
Go on long walks and breathe and realize that it's not all going to get solved in one day, one step at a time, like all of those things. Watching funny movies and just doing your best to connect with people and laugh, and hopefully it helps people.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything you'd want to ask us, the community members, about this role and what,
I am very interested to know what the community wants to see out of a cultural prevention role or cultural prevention practice. And I'm really looking for engagement. And right now, it's hard to say that because we haven't fully opened our doors yet. I want to mention that we're opening what we're calling a prevention hub in downtown. And it's a place where we will be gathering for community events, and we will be inviting people in to collaborate with us there. Our plan is to bring speakers on prevention or just like healthy communication or positive parenting, to speak with either the parents in the community, or to give a talk, you know, at a existing event that's going to happen already. And, you know, I'm just hoping for people to engage in these things and not to see them just as prevention,
but a community event where everyone can just connect.
Exactly. And the topics that we will be discussing, I don't plan for them to be really clinical or anything like that. And overall, I think the entire WCA team agrees that the culture is the prevention. Mm-hmm. And being able to talk with an elder and sit in a circle, you know, with your friends, beating and maybe watching a movie while you do it and eating some popcorn or whatever, it's going to create healing and connection that should always be there, especially in a community like ours where we are so blessed to have the ability to connect and to understand each other more intimately, I guess, than a larger community. Like, we have a big opportunity here. And crime in Wrangell is pretty low, but we do see little spikes here and there of things that happen. And you kind of go, oh, wow, I bet, you know, that person probably would have really benefited from something like this.
Yeah. Do you have an idea of when this will be set off on the ground?
Right now we're targeting a launch event at the end of the month. Okay. So things are coming fast. And I'll be announcing those things on the WCA website as well as our Facebook page and potentially in the newspaper. So keep your eyes peeled and your ears open for that.
Great. Thank you. Is there anything else you would like to add to this conversation?
Thank you for having me. I love this program. I've listened to many Talk on the Rocks, and I just think that KSDK has been one of the longstanding organizations in this community that brings positivity. And so I want to say thank you to KSDK.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you. That was Naomi Fowler, who is Wrangell Cooperative Association's new Domestic Violence Prevention Program Manager.